Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, RFERL's Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. I'm Steve Gutterman, and my guest this week is Irina Logunina, Director of Special Projects at RFERL's Russian Service. Thanks for joining me today, Irina.
Thank you for inviting, Steve.
Okay, well, it's late December, a time when things tend to happen in Russia, big court cases, for example. And in the next 2 weeks, the human rights group, and I'd say historical truth advocacy group, Memorial, faces hearings in two separate cases that the government is using to try to shut it down. So Memorial's fate may be sealed by the new year, something that, grim as it is, would be a symbolic ending for a year that has brought a kind of turbocharged clampdown on civil society in Russia. One of the hearings is this Thursday, December 23rd. The same day, President Vladimir Putin is to hold his annual press conference. Now, this is one of the set piece events that Putin uses to kind of burnish his image and send signals to Russians, to the West, and to the world. It runs several hours, usually about four, I believe. And despite all that's happened this year inside Russia, a great deal of the focus this time will be on Russia's big military buildup near Ukraine and the increasing pressure that Moscow is putting not just on Ukraine, but also on the West, Russia's push for breathtakingly sweeping changes to European security that would, among other things, bar NATO from further eastward expansion and bar the U.S. and other countries from military cooperation with countries that were not NATO members in 1997, the beginning of 1997, meaning most of Eastern Europe and all of the former Soviet Union. Now, as an article in the Washington Post put it, Putin wants to, quote, rework the consequences of the Soviet Union's collapse, unquote. And that, of course, occurred 30 years ago this month. Irina, what do you expect from this press conference, this performance? Do you think when it's over, we'll have a better idea of Putin's intentions toward Ukraine, or will he use it to keep people guessing?
Well, I think that, of course, he will address this issue, as you rightly pointed out, because this is something that he has to present to the domestic audience as his victory. For Putin, it is already a victory because of this ultimatum that he put to the West. Mm-hmm. And because of the military built up near the border with Ukraine, he became the center of international attention. Whether it's positive or negative attention, it depends on his own interpretations of what is going on. For him, it's definitely a positive attention because Russia is considered as a power again, and the West is trying to, you know, appease the regime of Mr. Putin in Kremlin. So he gets international calls of leaders. Russia is once again mentioned everywhere. So for him, it is a positive development, and this is something that he will definitely try to play on during this press conference. Whether we will get a more clear picture of the intentions of Kremlin regarding Ukraine, I'm not sure, because right now it's the fight of words. Mm-hmm. This is what's going on. And it's pretty heated, yes. For example, on Saturday, the Deputy Foreign Minister of Russia, Alexander Grushko, said publicly on one of the very popular YouTube channels that this conditions that Moscow put to NATO and Western countries are alternative to the military scenario in Ukraine. So the foreign ministry of Russia went so far as to threaten with the military scenario directly right now. So this is a, I think it is, it was actually on Saturday, a next step forward in this very heated rhetoric that we are seeing right now, and all the preparations for the to fulfill this rhetoric, actually, that we see on the border with Ukraine, on the Russian side and in Crimea. So whether we will get the more clear picture, I'm not sure, because as military experts and NATO headquarters is now saying, it's the level of concentration of troops and weapons with the Ukrainian border is enough to start military operation any moment, whether it is decided in Kremlin or not. That is something that we still don't know, and I doubt that that it will be known after the press conference.
Yes, I mean, I would tend to agree with you on that. I mean, I think he'll use it to kind of continue keeping the pressure on Ukraine and on NATO and the U.S. and the rest of the West. Very good point about Grushko's comments on Saturday. You know, up till now, it was kind of the Kremlin was saying, "Well, you have no, you can't say anything about our military movements, you know, on Russian territory." And we pose no threat. They don't pose a threat. Where at the same time, it was quite obvious that there was an implicit threat, and that it was linked directly to these demands that Russia was making in terms of NATO and the U.S. That it was linked to these demands that have now come out in kind of official form on Friday with. What the foreign ministry called, you know, draft agreements with NATO and with the United States. So, but Grushko's comments, as you said, you know, constituted, you know, pretty much an open threat. So that's quite a development. But as you also said, you know, it is at the level of words at this point. So one of the things that may happen before the press conference or around the time of it is that the U.S. and you know, Biden's been very clear that he's consulting with allies and other countries in Europe and Ukraine. So, but one thing we may get is a better idea of how the U.S. and NATO are going to respond. You know, they've said, the U.S. has said some of the proposals are unacceptable from the get-go, and others are worth discussing. So, another question is whether the Kremlin, you know, that a lot of people are asking, is whether the Kremlin really, you know, is ready to discuss some of them in light of the fact that some are unacceptable to the West, you know, or has just set out these ultimatums or these proposals as kind of designed to fail and then justify military action against Ukraine. So, you know, obviously that's one of the huge questions, but as you say, you know, whether we'll doesn't seem likely that we'll get an extreme amount of clarity on this from Putin at the press conference, though I'm sure he'll be asked. Now, I guess, you know, the attention may be on that, Ukraine, NATO, and the West, but what else are you expecting to hear about at the press conference? Do you think Putin will address the crackdown I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, the crackdown that's really gathered force over the past year since Kremlin opponent Alexei Navalny's return to Russia last January?
Well, Steve, you know, it depends, of course, on the questions that the journalists will ask. In former years and during these press conferences, in spite of the fact that there was a crackdown on media, on independent media in Russia, there were questions that were at least asked.
Right.
Whether we got the answers, I can say no. But the questions about the crackdown on civil society, the questions on, for example, a private military contractor group, Wagner, that people say are under absolute control of very close associate of Mr. Putin, Yevgeny Prigozhin, whom they call his personal chef. So there were questions asked. I think that this year, in spite of the fact that the press conference will be a kind of a little smaller than in previous years, it's going to be not 1,000 journalists, but 500 journalists. But still some media managed to, as we see right now, managed to get in. Some independent media managed to get in. And I'm sure that the question about Memorial will be asked. Because as you rightly pointed out, this is an absolute symbol of, you know, the memory of Stalin's repressions, the suffering of so many families in Russia, and the Memorial case and court against this organization is above everything that Putin's regime did before. It's just really a symbol of civil society, and it's an attempt to you know, rethink the past compared to what Kremlin is doing right now. So whether we will get the answer, probably we will get the same answer as we usually get in such situations. When it comes to the court hearings, Putin always say that, you know, we have a division of power in Russia, and court, something that is operating within the limits of the law. And I am, as a president, usually says Mr. Putin, cannot influence the decisions of the courts. Courts are independent. And of course, we all understand that that's not the case in Russia. We understand that courts are not operating independently in the country most of the time, like 99% of the time. But this is the illusion of a legal framework that Putin is trying to present and project in the country. So once again, probably we will not hear the proper answer, and once again, it's probably not going to influence the outcome of the court. But having said that, I have to also say that if this question is raised during the press conference, it's in itself a good moment, good thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to kind of overstate, I guess, the kind of importance or symbolism of, I mean, the real importance, in addition to the symbolism, of the Memorial case. I mean, you know, a lot of people say and have been saying for decades that, you know, Russia's will thrive when it reckons with its past. And, you know, a lot of Kremlin critics say that this effort to close Memorial is kind of the opposite of that. It's an effort to avoid and ensure that the country does not reckon with its past. So that will be something that's interesting to hear about if the question's raised. And of course, looking at these court hearings in these coming weeks will be also enlightening. Okay, Irina, we're running out of time. We'll wrap it up there. Thanks very much for joining me.
Oh, thank you for inviting, Steve.
Okay, great to have you on the podcast again. I'll be back next Monday, and please keep an eye out on Friday, December 31st, for the last Week in Russia newsletter of 2021. Thanks for listening.